Is this the beginning of the end for Brexit? Is the Labour Party about to perform one of the great political U-turns of all time and swing behind the campaign for a people's vote on the final Brexit deal? As over 100 motions on the Brexit question are submitted to the conference, are the members, to coin a phrase, looking to take back control? I'm Jamie Coward, editor of the Another Europe podcast. Today we're running a little ahead of our usual fortnightly schedule, as we take stock of what's happening with the Labour Party prior to its conference in Liverpool. To get a handle on what's going on, I'm joined by Elena Ivanova and Michael Chesson from the Another Europe Is Possible campaign HQ. They've been leading the efforts to get Brexit onto the conference agenda, and they'll be giving us the inside track on the latest developments. To feedback to us on today's podcast, you can find us on Twitter at @another_Europe, and you can also get us on facebook.com/AnotherEuropeIsPossible. Right, welcome to the show, guys.
Hello.
Hiya.
So what is Labour's position on Brexit and how has it changed over the last 3 years?
Labour campaigned, obviously, in favour of Remain, but its official campaign, Labour In, during that campaign was obviously not that different to the official Remain campaign, Stronger In. In fact, it featured pretty much the same sort of economistic top-down arguments about the economy, combined with rolling coverage of the fact that Alan Johnson used to be a postman. Jeremy Corbyn also campaigned for Remain, but kind of did so at a bit of an angle. The problem at the time was that the sort of radical 7 out of 10 case, as it were, which Corbyn put forward, was sort of lost in what was quite a bland official Labour campaign during the referendum itself. Since the referendum, Labour has taken the view that it has to respect the result. It needs to play very carefully with its split electoral base. That is, on the one hand, a growing, younger, tending to be more urban electoral base, especially electoral base of Corbynism, who overwhelmingly voted Remain. But also it has an older, more post-industrial working class base, especially outside of London. It's a myth to say that that base largely voted Leave, but it lent more in that direction. And so I think Labour's policy has been driven by caution and being very algebraic in terms of how it presents its position. The Labour leadership has never said there will absolutely not be a referendum on the terms of the deal. It has never said that Brexit will happen under every possible circumstance. In fact, it has always quite explicitly said all options are on the table. As we've got closer and closer towards exit day, and as it's been clearer what Tory Brexit means, i.e. the biggest expansion of border controls in Britain's recent history, and an agenda of deregulation, well then the Labour movement's position towards that deal will harden. In other words, the closer we get to exit day, the more Brexit stops being a concept and starts becoming a concrete policy. And Labour can oppose that concrete policy.
Do you think they deliberately kept their powder dry so they could U-turn later, or do you just think they had their arms twisted?
I think there's a mixture of all kinds of things. I certainly think for some at the top of the Labour left, you know, there are people who are in charge of bits of the Labour left who think that Brexit is a good thing and want it to happen. You know, there are certain people who, especially people who come out of the old Communist Party, and people who, you know, Lexit, or even, let's face it, a lot of them were basically just pro-Brexit, and not very left-wing about things like immigration either, who now present their case as if it's about electoral maths, or as if it's about, you know, the respect the people principle.
So you think they're being disingenuous?
Absolutely. There's a huge level of dishonesty among some on the pro-Brexit left when it comes to this debate.
I think also something that we need to factor in this debate about how Labour basically are being cautious is I think it's still quite a big gamble that they're taking, and I think it's an electoral gamble as well, because we are talking about this differentiation in the two voting bases that they're trying to satisfy. But if you look at last election and prognosis for further elections, Labour massively depends on that growing youth vote, actually. So it risks alienating a whole strata of voters as it is campaigning about young people having more rights, as it is campaigning about young people having more say, as it is campaigning about democratizing its own structures, democratizing the country, how we run things. At the same time, it's basically shutting down an issue that this particular electoral base is very much concerned with.
And I think there's another risk as well here, because I think we're going to this conference in a state of real disenchantment on the left going into this conference, particularly around things like open selections and leadership thresholds, all the stuff that's been battered around the NEC and will continue to be battered around at conference. It looks like there's been backroom deals about democratisation of the party. And like, frankly, the members have been sold out on it. And that's about the health of the Corbyn project, because if disenchantment is very high over things like internal party democracy, and if we also come out of this conference with essentially the same Brexit position that we came into, some kind of fudge that no one's happy with, or even worse, a position that is even more at odds with Labour's members who overwhelmingly back an anti-Brexit position, well, you know, we really are into the territory where the shine is coming off the Corbyn project. And I think that's dangerous for the morale of the left's project if members are not allowed to properly have a say about, you know, the policy on the biggest issue that's facing the party and the country.
Yeah, it's an odd coincidence, isn't it, that the Brexit row is happening alongside the democracy review. I mean, you can't really give the members a democracy review and then tell them to piss off when they ask for a people fight.
We'd love to say that. I'd love to say they couldn't ignore the democracy review as well. I mean, essentially what's happened is it looks like there has been a bit of a coup against the democracy review on the NEC, led by the major unions, who are playing their grand historical role in being sort of conservatives within the Labour Party family, and essentially preventing open selections and actually increasing the threshold for standing in a leadership election, meaning that we've gone from 10% of the PLP, which is obviously a block to the left, you needed 10% of members of parliament, to potentially a position where you need 10% of members of parliament, 5% of CLPs, which won't be a problem for the left, but also 5% of the affiliates, including two unions. Now, in 2015, it is very plausible that Jeremy Corbyn might not have been able to get those unions immediately. And in fact, he only got the unions on board later on, once he'd already got the membership swinging behind him in the public campaign. So the democracy review is looking a bit dodgy and bleak from a grassroots left perspective. And this will be a source of great internal division on the left. It could well be something that sets the members against the unions. And it's a real test of Corbyn and MacDonald's nerve. You know, they've spent decades fighting for this stuff. Are they now, when they themselves need it to form a government, are they now going to turn around and say, well, actually, you know, let's stay with the old internal system?
How much of this is really down to them, and how much do you think they're being lent on by the unions, etc.?
I think it's quite fanciful to suggest that we, and I use we here as the left-leaning members, we hold the leadership. We should not kid ourselves that we hold the Labour Party. We clearly don't. It was one of the biggest promises of the Corbyn project, that we're finally returning to the grassroots, we're finally giving members more say, that we fundamentally, that the Labour Party trusts its members. And now it seems that not everyone was on board with that project, even from the side of the unions who are our allies. I don't think that Corbyn necessarily holds the reins in this debate, but what it does prove to me specifically is that if in doubt, you should go with the members, with what the members say.
So do you think it's sort of gone from the Blair Campbell sofa to the Corbyn Milne sofa?
Yeah, I mean, look, the test of this conference will be, are we going to let members have their say on Labour's Brexit policy? And it seems like, because of the sheer weight of motions we've managed to get in, and because the unions have switched a little bit, it seems like, yes, the members are going to be allowed their say. Fine. You know, are you going to allow members the say on how MPs are selected? And ultimately, are you going to allow the people a say on their own future when it comes to the final Brexit deal? And if we really are still at the point where decisions are taken by people who are more important than you, behind closed doors, in processes you don't understand, then really what has changed about Corbyn's Labour Party as opposed to Blair and Brown's Labour Party? No, that's hyperbole.
Well, policy's changed, the rhetoric's
changed. Yeah, of course, but look, structurally, actually not much has. And all of the pressures to which Corbyn and MacDonald are succumbing are not new. They're ancient, they're as old as the party itself, you know, with the trade union bureaucracies clunking in. And, you know, they could well affect something similar on Brexit. You know, that would be tragic. And it would involve the biggest hope for the left in, certainly in my lifetime so far, being swallowed up by the Labour Party machine. You know, we wouldn't be the first generation that that's happened to.
Can you see something happening at this year's conference which makes the Chuck O'Manners and Chris Leslies just say, right, we've had enough, we're going to do the SDP Mark II?
Yeah, I think that's not so unlikely, actually. I think, as Michael said, yes, we are probably going to have the Brexit debate in some form or other on conference floor. The extent to which the members would meaningfully be able to decide the final version of that policy is questionable. And that's where I think there's a huge opportunity for some of those not so well wishers for Corbyn to basically use that as the major motif for creating a new organization, to basically say, we stuck around for long enough, we really believed that this was the moment when members will be listened to, members are clearly not listened to, we're just going to go ahead and do it because this is too important for the country, or whatever they, you know, however they spin it.
One of the most surprising stories of the week has been the unions. Do you want to give us a bit of background about that?
So we've seen a big shift in unions' sort of position on Brexit over this summer. We saw a Unite policy conference. What came out there was essentially a fudge in July. And Unite is now saying all options are on the table, explicitly including a people's vote. That gradually became radicalised towards TUC conference. And just before TUC conference, the GMB engaged in a members' consultation and later came out in favour of a people's vote at TUC. See, essentially what you had was a sort of a slight radicalization of the fudge that came out of Unite. So you can kind of see those big sort of lumbering beasts of the unions, the slowly that shift in policy has come through. And you know, it's come from we have to absolutely respect the referendum result and there's no going back, to all options are on the table, to all options are on the table including a people's vote. And for some unions now, it's we want a people's vote.
Including an option to remain.
Including an option to remain. I mean, that's crucial. And actually for some unions, and questions need to be asked the GMB on this, what do they mean by a referendum on the deal? Because if it's a referendum on the deal and it's a referendum between that deal and no deal instead of a referendum between that deal and remain, well, that's actually a nightmare scenario.
We'd have some pretty serious turnout problems for a start.
We'd have enormous turnout problems and we would probably have to campaign for against the deal. But without knowing that that would mean remain, we would be taking an enormous risk. I mean, we'd almost certainly do it. But yeah, so the unions have slowly moved. And I guess unions face pressures from below in the same way the Labour Party does. Mm-hmm. In fact, they probably face slightly more pressure from below because they're more formally speaking democratic. You know, in a union branch, you can actually propose a motion. In the Labour Party, you go through this enormously arcane process. Especially for sort of big establishment mainstream trade unions, including the left ones, economic performance matters. Economic performance matters for jobs. And so there's sort of a very bread and butter case there in terms of economic crisis, which I suppose they're slowly responding to.
Helena?
I think it is a worry and it is also an opportunity, isn't it? I mean, it's great and it's been quite good to have that story in the background in expectation of Labour's conference, that the union positions are shifting. What is slightly more worrying is basically what are they shifting towards and how they envisage this idea of a people's vote, and does that necessarily match up with what Labour members envisage when they pass those motions? And I think, for as Michael said, for some unions, yes, for others, not so much. And the problem is fundamentally the fact that the unions are likely to act as one when it comes to Labour conference. Mm-hmm. So yes, I would agree that there is more formal democracy there, but at the same time, the way the unions operate in practice is not the most democratic thing to witness because they basically have each other's backs. Mm-hmm. How they would interact with what the members bring to the table is going to be, I guess, the big question of conference, and it's going to be fascinating to watch, if nothing else.
Yeah, the other thing about unions is they're easier to manage. You know, from a party management perspective, it's much easier to manage a union that has a block vote of, you know, 25% of all union members affiliated to the Labour Party than it is to manage, you know, hundreds of CLP delegates. So part of what's going on here with the unions shifting is also part of a strategy to control as well as express the anti-Brexit surge within Labour. So look, we can look at this union shift and think that's good, What it also means is that there's limits on how fast things can move if you're swimming alongside these massive
killer whales.
Killer whales, yeah.
I was talking to someone the other day who will remain nameless, who basically told me that everything we were doing was a massive waste of energy and that really what we should be focusing on was pushing for an early election instead. Now, is it just that these people don't understand the Fixed Term Parliaments Act? Or do they know something I don't? Because as far as I can make out, scores of Tory and DUP MPs would have to actively bring down the whole show and risk a transformative Corbyn government. I mean, it's just a loony scenario.
They're the most disciplined and effective ruling class party in world history. You know, they're not there for no reason. And Anna Seabury and Ken Clark will well walk through the lobbies with you on Brexit, but the idea that they're going to vote to bring the government down is madness. I mean, look, we want a general election. In all our motions, we say we want a general election immediately. We also say it might not happen and we need a contingency plan for that. But there's also another hole in that, which is what happens if we do get a general election? What does Labour go into that general election saying about Brexit? If we go into that general election saying we're going to deliver Brexit, well, what kind of, you know, there is no bespoke Labour Brexit on the table. We've got no time to negotiate a second deal. All we can do is walk into a Norway-style EEA option, or we can do some kind of like basically Tory-style sort of fudgy hard, is it hard, is it soft, is it checkers, is it what kind of deal. And you know, that's either really bad for everyone, or it's, if in the case of Norway, straightforwardly worse than being in the EU and just means you have no say in anything.
I guess the other option that I hear from people is that a Labour Brexit will basically be this much more extended process that will somehow put a halt to it. Then Corbyn will go off to Europe and he will miraculously manage to deliver something that...
The Tony Benn Brexit.
Yeah, it's a very close relationship with Europe. We're all great friends. But at the same time, we're staunchly socialist and they're not. Fundamentally, what I have trouble figuring out in that line of argument is how is that going to be acceptable to all those voters you don't want to upset, whereas giving them a say on what happens next is not. Because to me, that scenario looks as much, you're trying to subvert the will of the people as having another vote, essentially.
Yeah. And part of the problem here is that the Labour Party abandoned the argument about what the will of the people was. And there's now this sort of common understanding that the will of the people was that we should basically deport everyone and go out on a limb into the middle of the Atlantic. And that was a clever tabloid narrative to spin if you're on the right. But Labour essentially sort of accepted that narrative. And so actually, yeah, if you think the will of the people is to deport everyone and go out on a limb into the Atlantic, well, hell yeah, I want to defy the will of the people, because you know that's mad and we should obviously try to change people's minds.
So there's an unprecedented number of motions going to a conference this year. Give us a couple of highlights.
So we've fought to get a record-breaking number of motions. More motions have been submitted on Brexit to this party conference than any conference on anything, I believe. So 151 motions were submitted on Brexit, 146 of those from CLPs, 5 from affiliates. Of those, I would say about 120 are pretty solidly anti-Brexit, pro-people's vote, and that is enormous and cannot be ignored. And what that has done is it has shifted the terrain of the debate. So at the very least, we have absolutely nailed the fact that we're going to get a debate. That's really positive. There's also a free movement angle on this. So we've got a free movement motion going in. Calls not only for the defence of free movement now, but for the extension of free movement. It's quite a radical motion. Close down all deportation centres, reverse attacks on migrants' access to the NHS. We reckon we can make that get heard as well. So it looks like we're going to get a debate on conference floor about free movement, which is exciting because there ought to be a majority for it. That could mean very good things for Labour's policy on migration. I mean, Jeremy Corbyn, John McDonnell and Diane Abbott are variously sort of a bit Eurosceptic because the EU is less of a clear moral issue than migration, you know. Immigration's clear. You know, we cannot allow the right to control the narrative about immigration. You know, they'll all secretly be very conflicted about the fact that Labour has undertaken such a transformation of its migration position, and hopefully we can put it back on sort of a footing of principle rather than of triangulation to the right. That, after all, is what the members and democracy is supposed to be about.
I think something else that is quite positive is actually through the process of talking to a lot of these COPs personally. I think we're seeing COPs submitting contemporary motions in places where they have not bothered to do that for the past 5, 6, 10 years. You know, places where very well-meaning Labour Party members going to conference regularly, but never really engaging with that process of setting party policy, using conference for what it's there for, setting party policy. The fact that Brexit is the issue that has reinvigorated those mechanisms, as arcane as they are, as complicated as they are, is, I think, a really positive thing in and of itself. And I'm hopeful that some of those places will continue to use the tools that are available to them, and this will be just the first year of many where they will exercise their democratic rights as members.
And it's also built up our infrastructure, I suppose, as an organisation. Well, this campaign that's built towards conference, you know. I mean, mostly Elena has run the Left Against Brexit speaker tour, but, you know, as an organisation, we've, you know, organised an awful lot of events around the country this summer. But actually, the Labour Party conference drive has really built an infrastructure of local contacts and local groups for us. And that hopefully will stand us in good stead in the months to come, when the emphasis will shift off internal Labour politics and towards the streets and shifting public opinion more broadly.
Right, so, predictions. Basically what I'm saying is, do either of you have a clue what's going to happen over the next week?
I'll stick my whole house, which I don't own. Don't own and could never dream of owning in the next 20 years on us getting a Brexit debate. We're going to get votes on Brexit at Labour conference.
And what will that look like? Is the leader's office just going to go, thanks, interesting point of view, but fuck off?
Well, the leadership can't do that, you see. Once the members have prioritised it and it's going into motions and votes and all the rest of it, the leadership can't do anything directly that completely kills the debate. Worth saying that also, I guess, the leadership are primarily composed of people who do believe in democracy and debate and have fought for it for a while, even if they're now boxed into this awful position on other things. But yeah, I mean, look, the process is, we've got our motions submitted. They will end up in a composite. So on Sunday night at 6:30 p.m., every CLP or union that submitted any text on Brexit will go into a room. They'll each send one or two people. And those people will effectively shout at each other for hours until they come up with either one draft or two drafts or three drafts or four drafts, which reflect different options and policies which can then be put to conference. The problem that we've got is the union machines and the fact that the unions in that room will hold a lot of the cards, because they are the people who can deliver votes on conference floor, because they hold card votes. So I would imagine what will actually be voted on at conference will either be a substantial step forward, a referendum on the deal with an option to remain if we can't get a general election, or it will be a vote between two different kinds of referendum. Are we campaigning for a referendum with an option to remain, or are we campaigning for a nightmare referendum in which we have to choose between different kinds of Brexit? I think that will probably be the division on conference floor. Logic would say we should win that, because the idea that Labour would go into that referendum and campaign either for May's deal or for no deal is bananas.
Mm. Mm.
But with the unions where they are, with the leadership where it is, you just don't know what's going to happen. And it isn't always the best argument that wins the floor.
Helena?
I think if you had asked me last week, I would have been very anxious and thinking that the best we can get is basically to even win that trigger ballot in terms of debating it in the first place. Now that the unions are in there, we probably will. So then, you know, the goalposts keep moving. What a good scenario and what a bad scenario looks like keeps changing. So I really can't make any predictions. The only thing I know is I'm going to be absolutely knackered on Wednesday.
Yeah, not much sleep will be had by all.
Right, well, thanks very much for taking some time out from your hectic schedules. And I guess I'll see you on Saturday morning.
Excellent. I'm contractually obliged to say I'm looking forward to it.
If you want to follow the latest developments at this year's conference, you can catch our daily videos, which we'll be releasing every morning. Thanks to our guests, and thanks to you for listening. If you've enjoyed today's podcast, leave us a rating or review on your podcast platform. You can also feedback to us on Twitter at @another_Europe, or you can get us on facebook.com/anotherEuropeIsPossible. After conference, we'll be returning to our usual fortnightly slot. See you next time.